It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
So I want you to imagine something for a second. Just picture yourself embarking on this incredibly strict, you know, highly regimented diet.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right, and you're doing it because you just want to fit into one of your favorite outfits again. You're putting in the work, you're making the daily sacrifices, you're tracking all the calories.
With a lot of people do, yeah.
Exactly. But then your closest friends publicly launch a charity telethon.
A telethon.
A full-blown telethon, yeah. And the whole point of it is to raise money to buy you a larger size of that exact outfit, specifically so you can give up the diet immediately and just go back to drinking vodka.
I mean, that is just the absolute definition of a loving yet highly chaotic community intervention. It really sets such a specific tone for what we are looking at today.
It really does. So our mission today is to unpack the daily audio logs of the Big Fatty Online Universe, or the BFO.
Oh, right.
And we're looking specifically at the week of September 7th through the 11th, 2026.
Such a fascinating week, too.
Yeah, it really is. This specific week perfectly illustrates how a person uses these intensely hyper-focused daily routines to balance, you know, profound human connections, unavoidable biological maintenance, and just absolute televised chaos.
Oh, for sure. And actually, as a quick terminology rule for our listeners before we jump into the weeds here, as we analyze this community's daily broadcast, we are intentionally avoiding the standard industry term, the term for an audio show episode.
Right. We're not saying that word.
Exactly. We're avoiding it. That helps us stay true to the rhythm and the specific language of this world.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's jump right into the chronological start of the week. It's Monday, September 7th, which is Labor Day.
A big day.
Yeah. And the host kicks things off with this great historical reference to the old Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon. You know the one, right?
Okay. Right.
How it used to start like midday on Sundays and then run all the way until 6 p.m. on Mondays.
With Ed McMahon, right?
Ed McMahon running the giant tote board.
Well, you know, that historical reference isn't just nostalgia. It actually anchors the listener in this shared cultural memory before he pivots to a modern, localized equivalent that's happening right inside his own community.
And that modern equivalent is exactly what I was talking about in the opening hook.
Yeah.
Over on the Lev It Up broadcast, Dr. Wesley Pythagoras Stone and Daniel Brewer decided to host their own comedic telethon.
I love this so much.
It's hilarious. The entire charitable drive was set up to stop Big Fatty from doing his Nutrisystem diet.
Right, because he was trying to lose weight to fit into a specific fat suit.
Yeah, which he affectionately refers to as his morbidly obese suit.
Literally.
But they wanted listeners to donate real money so he could just buy a physically larger suit, abandon the restrictive diet completely, and return to his beloved vodka and food.
I mean, if you look at the underlying psychology there, it's actually a brilliant subversion of the typical supportive intervention. Well, usually a community rallies to keep someone on the wagon, right?
Yeah.
To keep them on the diet. Here, they're using a public broadcast to playfully sabotage his personal health routine because they actually value the version of him that indulges.
Huh. I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah, they're broadcasting this idea that his comfort and his authentic, you know, unrestricted self are worth funding. It's really sweet in a twisted way.
It really is. And that deep communal investment in his personal life, it kind of scales out into how this community tracks their shared reality, too. Like, we get these incredible microeconomy updates through the crowdsourced gas reports.
Oh, a gas game.
Yes. Listeners call in to report local fuel prices. We get James and Tim quoting a wonderfully outdated $2.89 gallon, which is actually a recorded drop from way back in October 2024.
Right. A little blast from the past.
But then reality hits because Moose P reports $3.83, and Laughing Buddha up in St. Paul is paying $4.14.
Ouch. But, you know, tracking those micro fluctuations, it really sets the stage for a broader theme of the week. The gas prices aren't just numbers to them.
What are they then?
They're a collective measurement of the friction of daily life. Like, it's the literal cost of just existing and moving around in the world.
Man, that's so true. And it's not just fuel either. We had an official Lime report from Scotty the Aussie Battler.
Oh my gosh, the Lyme report.
Yeah, Scotty calls in to report that at the local farmer's market where Ismail works, limes are currently a staggering $2.50 Australian dollars each.
Which is wild.
Right, it converts to 1.80 US dollars for a single piece of citrus. One lime.
One lime. But see, when you establish that the outside world is that economically hostile, I mean, almost $2 for a lime,
right,
it provides the exact context we need for how the host defends his own household economy.
Oh, you're talking about the grocery haul.
Exactly.
Which brings us right to Wednesday's grocery haul at the Vonsies. Let's look at the literal inventory of this run, because the level of detail is just staggering to me.
It's an art form.
He breaks down his exact buy one, get one, or BioGo acquisitions, and he secures, let's see, Caesar salad kits, Marie Callender's chicken pot pies.
A steak.
Absolutely. Ben and Jerry's ice cream, zero sugar jello pudding, Post honey bunches of oats, Sun chips, and in-store popped popcorn.
That's quite the list.
Every single item is part of a calculated BOGO strategy, but his crowning achievement of the trip, Thai spicy chicken nuggets rang up incorrectly at the register.
Oh, the best feeling.
So under the store's Vonsies promise policy regarding pricing errors, he got them completely free.
The Vonsies promise operates as this, like, verifiable retail victory condition.
Okay, hold on, though. I have a real problem mapping this out. Let's dig into this for a second because I want your take.
Okay, lay it on me.
We're watching this meticulous tracking of BOGO deals, and it honestly feels like watching a Wall Street hedge fund manager aggressively balancing a massive financial portfolio.
That's a great comparison.
Right. But why does a guy who is broadcasting to and basically managing a global network of listeners care so deeply about a $5 box of Thai spicy chicken nuggets ringing up wrong?
Well, it's about building a fortress.
A fortress?
Yeah. We just talked about the gas prices and the $2 limes, right? In a chaotic world where the macro economy is entirely out of your control, coupon math provides a necessary, rigid structure.
Huh.
Securing free chicken nuggets because the register made an error isn't about saving $5. It's a quantifiable victory over a massive corporate system.
I hear that. I really do. But a defense mission for what? Like $5 worth of frozen food? Is the illusion of control really worth the hours of tracking, the receipt checking, and all the coupon math?
It absolutely is, because the math is the only thing that doesn't change on you.
Okay, fair point.
Think about it. Human relationships are messy. Technology fails. The global economy is unpredictable. But if you apply the rules of the Vonsies promise correctly, you win. It proves he can still successfully defend his borders.
That makes a weird amount of sense.
Once that personal economy is locked down and predictable, he can safely invite chaos into his life in other ways.
And that transition from personal control to manufactured chaos leads us perfectly into the most critical network mandate of the podcast.
Oh yes, we have to do the mandate.
I need to deliver this to you, listener, with the absolute uncompromising sincerity it demands in this universe. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights on CBS.
It is the rhythmic, unavoidable heartbeat of the week.
And his emotional investment in Big Brother's 1,000th episode milestone is so heavy, we get a deep dive into the reality TV mechanics.
Oh, he covers all of it.
Yeah. He details Barrett winning the head of household competition by rolling balls over humps. He tracks the intense social manipulation, like Yash lying to the entire house about his $5,000 power.
Classic Yash.
Right. And we hear about Rick Dean's winning the blockbuster battle back to take himself off the block, and the emotional fallout of Lala being evicted and sent to Shady Pines.
Which is just the best phrase.
I love it. It's the community's playful shorthand referencing the Golden Girls retirement home for where reality contestants go when they get the boot.
But notice how this mirrors his grocery shopping.
Wait, how does Big Brother mirror grocery shopping?
Because Big Brother is a highly controlled environment with strict rules and competitions, just like the BioGo deals.
Oh, I see.
The manufactured drama provides all the adrenaline of betrayal and strategy, but because it's contained inside a television set, there is zero actual risk to his own life.
I'm trying to map out his broadcasting day in my head, though, because right after this, the tone shifts radically.
It really does.
He transitions directly from the manufactured, safe drama of Big Brother into the completely unvarnished reality of what he calls the love chamber.
The love chamber.
On Monday, he receives a visit from a brand new gentleman caller.
And True to the architecture of his daily logs, the logistical stats of the caller are provided with the exact same clinical precision as his grocery receipts.
Yes, exactly. It's so jarring. He lays out the stats. The caller is 25 years old, 6'2", 190 pounds, ginger, meaning red hair and facial hair with massive legs from playing college soccer.
Very specific.
It's extremely. And he lives in an apartment complex near a location called the Big Circle. And then the encounter itself involves the use of the special chair, a little bobo honking.
Mo wonking.
Which is the community's coded phrase for playful physical intimacy. And it concludes with what is clinically and unforgettably described as a wet cleanup on Big Fatty's chin.
I mean, it is a radically honest public accounting of his private life.
But how does that formatting even work without alienating the listener?
What do you mean?
Like, he's reviewing a cheesecake, analyzing a reality TV eviction, and then with the exact same measured tone, he breaks down a highly explicit romantic encounter with a 25-year-old. It feels like reading a mundane chore list where item number one is doing the laundry, item two is buying Sun Chips, and item number four is sudden graphic romance.
It sounds jarring from the outside, I totally get that, but this absolute lack of compartmentalization is actually the secret sauce of the BFO.
Really?
Yeah. By placing the explicit Grindr hookup right next to the Beer Go Caesar salads in the Big Brother recap, he is actively leveling the hierarchy of shame.
How do you mean leveling the hierarchy of shame?
So traditional media tells us that romantic or explicit encounters need to be treated with hushed tones, right? Hidden away or separated entirely from the mundane parts of our day.
Sure, yeah.
By treating a hookup with the exact same clinical, measured delivery as an error at the grocery store checkout, he neutralizes any societal judgment. He treats all human experiences as equally valid. It's just another piece of weather happening in his day.
Wow, that actually makes a lot of sense. He refuses to put the romance on a pedestal or hide it in the basement, which means nobody can judge him for it. It just is.
Precisely. And that radical transparency is exactly why his community trusts him so deeply.
That friction with modern expectations makes perfect sense when you look at how his community is interacting with technology this week, too. As we move into September 9th and 10th, the broadcasts start to highlight this fascinating battle between the human hard drive and the crushing disappointment of modern hardware.
The tech letdowns this week are particularly glaring for a community that spends so much time online.
They really are. We get a full recap of the Apple Snack event hosted by John Thermos.
Oh yes, the big event.
The entire tech world was hyping up the iPhone Ultra, but it turned out to just be the iPhone Duo.
Womp womp.
Exactly. And the new foldable phone costs what the host calls a half-falutin $2,000. He jokes that Dr. Stone, given his high roller status, will probably buy three of them.
I wouldn't put it past him.
We even hear a frustrating report from a listener whose brand new left AirPods Pro 2 have started uncontrollably chirping like a dying bird.
It's funny you call it friction because there is this massive irony here. The modern hardware is incredibly expensive and literally dying in his listeners' ears.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the host proudly announces he has just finished reading a 596-page physical book covering the first 50 years of Apple snacking.
Right. That's such a great point. He is consuming the history of the technology through an entirely analog physical medium. And that human analog element consistently outperforms the machine in these broadcasts.
Over and over again.
We see that outperformance perfectly in the SSQD, the So Question Desk. Listeners submit questions, and this week's dive into childhood physical education class is incredibly revealing.
Oh, this was a great segment.
Ms. Bacon writes in confessing that she used to fake belly aches just to avoid the humiliation of being picked last in PE, noting that she much preferred bowling.
And that prompts Big Fatty to reveal his own avoidance strategy, right?
Yes. He dodged physical education entirely by volunteering to decorate the classroom bulletin boards.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But what they are doing there is a shared communal processing of childhood vulnerability.
Yeah, that's true.
They are using this massive digital broadcast network to validate each other's historical, very human survival tactics.
And that theme of human survival tactics against failing machinery carries right over into the daily audio logs of these incredibly messy, real-world jalopy trips.
Oh boy, the jalopy trips.
The technology in their cars might be failing, but the human observation is just brilliant. Vader calls in from his jalopy on the way to the Tessellator, which is a local machine shop landmark in Savannah.
Right.
He's driving through the rain, observes a highway spin out, and hilariously deduces that the driver with the long ponytail must be the old gal who just got back from a 45-day cruise of a lifetime.
It's a perfect inside joke woven into a real-world traffic report, but it also shows how the community finds entertainment in the breakdown of order.
Which brings us to the absolute misery of Patty Bacon's disastrous Arkansas road trip.
Oh, poor Patty.
It was so bad. She was on the hunt for employment, armed with a physical 2021 Rand McNally Atlas because her car phone completely died.
A 2021 Atlas in 2026.
Yeah. She drove for 6 agonizing days in an un-air-conditioned jalopy, desperately searching for a town called Tiny Toons.
6 days without AC. I can't even imagine.
Her goal was to cash in on a spaghetti berry, which is the community's code for a specific restaurant's free meal promotion so she could hand out her resume.
Yeah.
And she failed completely. She never found the town, and she never found the spaghetti berry.
Patty Shreep is the ultimate analog failure, yes. But we have to look at why a broadcast would spend time highlighting someone driving around lost for 6 days.
What do you think?
It serves as a vital counter-narrative to the curated perfection we usually see online. By broadcasting a 6-day, sweaty, un-air-conditioned failure where she doesn't even get the job, the BFO creates a safe space for its listeners to be imperfect.
That's really powerful, actually.
It turns personal disaster into communal entertainment and genuine connection.
Speaking of the broader media landscape, it is worth noting he tracks major media shifts just as closely as he tracks these personal journeys.
He really does.
The broadcast this week noted that Nora O'Donnell's replacing Charlie Rose on CBS this morning and that Wheel of Fortune announcer Jim Thornton was fired. And what's fascinating as an outside observer is that he doesn't treat this politically.
Not at all.
We don't have to take a stance on any of these figures to appreciate that for this community, this is simply the shifting architecture of their daily media diet.
The focus remains entirely on the routine of consumption. The anchors and announcers are just fixtures in the house, you know. When someone moves the furniture, you note it and move on.
That sets us up for the final arc of the week, September 10th and 11th. We leave the technology and the media behind and confront absolute biological reality.
Yes, the unavoidable toll of keeping the human machine running.
After securing his BGO deals at the Vonsies, he got his seasonal COVID and flu shots. And the biological fallout is immediate and disruptive.
It always is.
He reports having a sore right arm, tossing and turning in bed all night, and ultimately sleeping like a fussy baby instead of getting his usual meticulously tracked 8.5 to 9 hours of rest.
When you measure your sleep down to the half hour and you build your entire day around that rest, a night of tossing and turning feels like a massive systemic failure.
It really does.
The frugal fortress has been breached from the inside.
It has. But the contrast to that rough night is what makes the next day's broadcast so beautiful. He follows up that miserable, sore, fussy night with an incredibly wholesome morning excursion.
Yes, the barbershop.
He realizes that his bad hair is actually contributing to his restlessness, so he heads out to the barbershop.
And the scene he observes there is just a perfect slice of life.
Yeah.
It takes him completely out of his own head.
He is observing a young African-American father who is wearing Crocs, which, of course, Big Fatty playfully but firmly judges.
Naturally.
But it ignores the interactions with the kids that steal the show. There's a 3-year-old getting his hair cut, and the stylist has this mini gun-shaped hairdryer. The air spray startles the kid at first, but the stylist handles it brilliantly. She lets the kid shoot the air gun right back at her, messing up her hair.
That is so sweet.
It sends the 3-year-old into uproarious giggling, and suddenly the whole barbershop is laughing.
It's a moment of spontaneous community joy that you simply cannot script or plan for.
And right next to that, there is a 1.5-year-old getting what looks like his first haircut.
Yeah.
The kid is just drooling absolutely everywhere, soaking the cape, totally overwhelmed by the sensory experience.
Poor little guy.
Eventually, they placate him with a sucker, and he just passes out, sound asleep on his dad's shoulder, while 2 barbers carefully finish the cut.
This is where the broadcast transforms from a simple daily log of events into profound observation.
Let's look at the emotional arc here, because I think it's important. It's like watching this incredibly intricate, rigid clockwork mechanism. You have the coupon routines, the vaccine schedules, the strict sleep tracking, the Big Brother viewing schedule.
Right, all gears turning.
Exactly. But sometimes that clockwork jams up. You get a sore arm, you sleep terribly, but the jam forces you to step out of the routine, sit in a barber chair, look out the window, and actually appreciate the view.
Witnessing the unfiltered innocence of youth in a completely mundane setting, like a barbershop, a kid giggling at a hairdryer, a toddler falling asleep on his father's shoulder, with a sucker that is the exact kind of grounding human joy that makes maintaining the rigid routine worth it in the first place.
It grounds you.
It really does. The routine protects him. But excursions like this remind him what it means to be alive outside of it.
It is the perfect balance, which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to mull over today as you go about your own routines. We spend so much of our time trying to automate our lives. We buy the expensive $2,000 phones, we download all the apps, we build these strict routines specifically to avoid friction.
We all do it.
But what if the jalopy trips of our lives, the six-day unair-conditioned failures, the sore arms, the chirping earbuds, the suddenly gropped routines, what if those messy glitches are actually the very things that make our human stories worth sharing with each other?
Something to think about the next time your GPS fails, your phone acts up, or your carefully planned schedule gets ruined by a bad night's sleep.
Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you to come right back here for next Sunday's show as we continue to unpack the brilliant, messy reality of this universe. Until then, embrace the friction.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.
Thank you for calling. How do you hang the damn